My specialty is, as François mentions, is migrant letters, migrant correspondence, and particularly lately it's been veered towards love letters and how those love letters talk to us and speak to us about migration. And I'm particularly interested in Italian letters come into Canada, but I'm also now, I've widened the spectrum of letters that I look at from an international viewpoint, even within through the project that I worked on at Minnesota, where we incorporate letters of other nationalities. This gave me an opportunity to think about my current project, which is on migrant and refugee war orphans from 1945 to 2015, their life stories, their sense of resilience, how they find love in Italy and South Africa. So looking at the laws more closely helped me to understand how the macro narrative of policy operates into the lives and affects them ultimately greatly. So I'll start with this short quote. My hand is heavy. I don't know if what I'm doing is good or bad. I'm sorry to leave my home and other things, but the world is made for traveling. With God willing, I too will come to America. But now I feel sad and have little desire to leave. As the old proverb says, as the old proverbs say, my native hometown. Personal narratives of migrants and refugees speak to and in tension with migration policies. As we consider the recent immigration crisis culminating, what becomes especially evident is that the narratives of migrants and refugees, much like their counter-narratives, shape and are shaped by social and political awareness and the creation of policy and laws. What kinds of stories of refugees and migrants are we talking about here? And particularly today, I'm only going to be focusing on migrants and not on refugees. But the reason I'm including refugees in my introduction is because I want to extend the conversation with you on migrant and refugees currently moving across the globe. How do they influence the individual and broader communities, and vice versa? In what ways do the stories give insight into the shaping of policies and laws? More emphatically, how do policies influence the lives of migrants and refugees today and in the past? So today I'll be discussing ways in which I'll be discussing life stories of migrants told through their letters and the impact or not of migration policy. And given my interest in the history of emotions, and in this case, empathy, I conclude with the question, what does empathy have to do with all this? So stories of migrants and refugees have become increasingly front page news. Okay. Almost daily, the New York Times, The Guardian, Al Jazeera, other news outlets report stories that underscore life stories of individuals, usually facing injustices and challenges with regards to their movement. Consider for a moment the stories appearing in headlines about women, men being deported currently in the U.S., or lifeless bodies of children, toddlers, washing up the shores of the Mediterranean. And you remember these are stories that we see. This was very recently in the New York Times, where they captured the lives, young lives, the stories of women who have returned from the Boko Haram experience. Today, however, I offer a different approach. I provide a historical perspective on the intersections between the law and narrative. And I look at them, especially concerning Italian migrants, prospective migrants who were about to leave or who wanted to leave Italy in the 1950s. So from 1947 to 1960s, in their love and their loved ones at the home, and how they were affected by Canadian migration policy at the time. Indeed, the post-war period witnessed the largest movement of Italian migrants arriving in Canada, a number that exceeded over 400,000 women, men, and children reaching Canadian shores. And has, as historian Franca Jacobet observes, in some cases, entire clusters of villages and towns in the southern regions were mobilized and linked across the ocean. Now, they were facilitated generally by the Government of Canada's sponsorship program. Chain migration of single and married men, followed by their immediate and extended families, began to arrive in post-war Canada. So the narratives, though, I highlight today are for the most part drawn from those intimate worlds of letters, referred to as in migrant letters, exchanged between immediate family members and lovers. And my aim is to provide that historical viewpoint that will contribute to drawing parallels, I hope, and asymmetries between the past and present migration refugee crisis, a discussion I hope to engage with you after. As a historical source, migrant letters written between and to migrants within the context of migration have enjoyed renewed appreciation in recent decades. The study itself begins in the late 1910s when sociologist Thomas Zemansky turned to the migrant letter as a source for showing the impact of modernization on traditional societies and the resulting breakdown in family solidarity and organization. You have then other historians who become interested in the America letter, and that we have to credit Theodore Blagan, George Stevenson, Marcus Hansen, who see the migrant letter as the ideal source for research to facilitate a shift from being a quaint artifact to a catalyst to mass migration. Now, scholarly interest shifted to the migrant letter as a primitive source to learn about not only the experience of migration, the motives of migration, the images of places of settlement in migrants' imaginations, and in their daily lives and socioeconomic adaptation. And then we have these qualitative first-hand testimonies that offer us some insight into the social and economic adjustment in different contexts across the globe, where there was literacy, of course, where the pen was used most emphatically to remain in contact. The new social history had an impact on the way we began to analyze letters once again and looked at them for what they offered in terms of insight on health, family, gossip, friendship, etc. Since the 1990s, we have greater appreciation of the language that is presented in the letters and the kinds of broader disciplinary content or practices that are employed in this notion of writing letters. The nurturing and renegotiating, if you will, family relations and personal networks becomes increasingly an area of study that talking about. Was the immigrant's own responsibility to learn one of the two official languages. It was their responsibility to find ways of upgrading their skills, and it was their problem to look after themselves in case of work accidents or unemployment. With her husband in Canada, Sarah continued to live in an extended family agricultural household with her two children and other members of her husband's family, and she eagerly awaited news which would assure her of an imminent reunion with her husband. 9 months of separation would need to transpire before Sarah and Dante and the children, before Sarah and the children were invited for an interview in Rome. What those 9 months of separation signified daily is iterated by Sarah in a letter to Dante on the 25th of March, 1956. Now, I'll come to that in a second, but here's what she says. And she says, "Dear Dante, I feel your absence. I try to encourage myself because I hope your absence is short, but I tell you honestly, if it would be for an extended time, I wouldn't be able to do it. Believe me, first for the responsibility of taking care of their young children, and another reason is that one feels terribly terrible living apart, even if for a brief period." On his part, separation proved equally trying, as he wrote in one of his letters to his wife, "I'm happy to hear that all three of you are in good health. For me, good health is steady work. But I miss your presence very much, more and more with each passing day." And at some point in one of the letters, she says something that I thought was really quite interesting. She says, "With each passing day, our existence diminishes." So there's this cognizance that time is moving, you're not here, my life is just, you know, our days are passing, our days are diminishing, and we're not living the life that we had hoped for.